easy to get a new razor.
All right. I think that that was frustrating.
I'm awake.
I think we're ready to go. Sorry about that. A little bit of a delay. All that setup and prep time. And I had a cable fail at the last minute.
I should just, that's your excuse and you're sticking to it.
Yes. So thank you. Thanks for coming. I know it's the Easter weekend and most of you should have left because it was chaos. But this is the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions and we're here at Tequila's, typically from 9:15 to 10:15, doing our club meeting. And I try and record this for posterity and the other four people that are interested in what's going on at our meeting. We were talking before officially starting our meeting. Dave had brought up an interesting topic about how USA TV Now was blocking, or more about what you're talking about.
USA TV Now has been officially removed from the Roku channel. Roku says that US TV Now requested it, but then something else I read said it's really requested by providers of the content like CBS, NBC, asking Roku to quit disseminating illegal content. And the reason for this financially is they get very little income from something like that, and they get the potential of much more income by being able to sell Roku's in Mexico, which are not currently allowed. So that's the reason. So
you can get it without
what?
A Roku.
It works,
right. This sounds
TV,
like,
but not a Roku. It's Roku that's.
Roku's not allowed.
Yeah, Roku's have been kind of.
Roku's kind of getting thrown to the dogs, right?
Well, there are also other channels. They're trying to eliminate all the private channels.
What US TV Now did, I cannot find the email I'm looking for. They are now called Teleup. That's how I'm pronouncing it.
Teleup?
T-E-L-E-U-P.
T-E-L-E-U-P.
You install it.
E-U-P.
T-E-L-E-U-P.
U-P.
Teleup. I have to use my computer and my Roku, and it's working just fine.
Teleup? Teleup.
We're getting a couple of different channels that we didn't get before.
So they've renamed their service.
T-E-L-E-U-P.
I'm thinking it's more person who's doing a organization of existing things and then rebroadcasting them, rather than US TV Now, because US TV Now didn't tell me anything about it.
And I wish I could find that email.
So did the channel just disappear from your Roku?
No, it says it's no longer authorized.
Just says it's no longer, you can't open it.
Have you done some Google searches on that to see if anybody's found a way to authorize it? Because it seems like
US TV Now sent me the email telling me how to get in with Teleup to start using that instead.
Put
that on the Roku. And
it's a private channel.
Because that's the thing with the private channels is that they are side-loaded applications. They don't come from the Roku store. So it seems like they would have a lot of trouble locking that down unless they lock down that whole feature, like an Apple TV has that whole feature locked down.
Another evidence of this is Nowhere TV. I don't know if anyone uses this.
Never heard of Nowhere TV.
Nowhere was a great provider of many, many different channels and news stations and things like that. And they kind of quit doing some of the maintenance a few years ago. And now when you go to Nowhere TV, they put up a message that says, effective April 15th, we are no longer maintaining the site. Anything in your favorites will continue to work until that site makes a change. We're not maintaining anything. And our other selection things won't work unless it's in your favorites.
That sounds like an official statement to avoid litigation. We are absolutely not encouraging you to use this service.
Right. You know, save it as your favorites. Because, like, the thing I like to watch there is the NBC Nightly News. Mm-hmm. And it's 15 minutes because there's no ads.
Hey, on a side note with that, have you guys checked out the CBS News app? They are allowing that live stream internationally. So if you're looking for CBS News, you can download that app and watch that live.
Is CBS News new? Because I just discovered it on my TV service.
It's not new. It's been around for a long time.
It has, okay.
Yeah, but the app is, I've only been aware of the app for a year, I think.
Now, CBS All Access, on the other hand, is probably the most restricted service I've ever seen.
Outside of Hulu. And
no, even more so.
Yeah?
They seem to be detecting where you're getting in through most VPNs and everything.
Yeah,
and many of the VPNs will even tell you, we can't get it, period.
Even if you pay that 16 or whatever a month?
Mm-hmm. Well, they have some rigid copyright protection deals, copyright licensing and distribution deals throughout. I don't know if you guys are aware. I'm aware of this because I'm a sci-fi Star Trek fan. And you can watch this new Star Trek Discovery on Netflix throughout the world except the United States.
Really?
In the United States, you have to purchase CBS All Access to watch the show. And they actually use the new Star Trek as their... As their, what do you call it? The they launched their channel with it. I'm missing the adjective, but they launched their channel with that program. They knew that people would buy in to CBS All Access just to watch this Star Trek show, but they made a deal with Netflix to distribute it everywhere else.
I'm using Whytopia to watch CBS.
So did you watch enough of
Whytopia is working for CBS? All Access?
No, just
just their website.
CBS.com.
Okay.
CBS works, but not All Access.
Yeah. All Access is their competitor with Disney, with their competitor with Netflix.
But I just want to rewatch, Big Bang Theory or whatever.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
is the new Star Trek?
Along this power... This is us. Power protection done by these big companies. Comcast was good for me down here because what I couldn't find on my TV service down here, I could get on a VPN and watch Comcast cable from home. Now, they're telling me on 90% of the stuff, you have to be in your home to watch this.
Yes.
Which...
Because they can actually... They can see where you're coming from.
Well, even if it says I'm from L.A., I'm still in the United States, but they're saying I'm not at home, so I can't watch it. So we'll have a discussion when I go back this year.
In English or Spanish?
See you later. Yeah.
My buddy Theo, that's been at the Computer Club meeting before, he's the Bitcoin guy, is actually coming down in a whirlwind trip. He's going to spend 24 hours here. He wants to film me talking about Bitcoin.
Oh, and no.
He just sent me a message saying, say hi to everybody at the club. I imagine he's on a bus right now listening to the Computer Club.
Did you tell him what the consensus was of the older generation? Bitcoin.
He's actually why I listened and watched our meetings about that. He finds you guys fascinating.
Which one was Soviet Institute?
Can't believe
we're fascinating. I love it.
You are fascinating.
I love it.
He likes this group in that respect because a lot of us live in this bubble of tech and understanding.
And it's going farther.
Yeah,
farther.
Watch it.
No, and you guys represent like a real normal group of people. It's it's easy for me to talk to Theo about Bitcoin, and we both understand what we're talking about. But when you need a consensus of people that from all walks of life to get a feel for it.
I don't like normal.
I don't think normal is the right word.
All right, well, that wasn't the point of any of this. Normal's not the right word.
We're down here.
Yeah, we're not back normal. To CBS All Access. The only way I know to get it is strong VPN.
Strong VPN?
And seems to work with their router servers. And they only have a few selected ones that it works with. Unfortunately, I think my router crapped out.
What's the difference between All Access and just CBS?
Many shows. It's pay.
You have to pay.
CBS
for it,
is free.
CBS.
Oh, so an extension of CBS.
CBS All Access
it's
is
all the CBS
their
program.
Catalog. So you go to it like you'd go to a Netflix, and there's a huge catalog of CBS content that you have available to
you. You have CBS Live, for one thing.
You have what?
You have CBS Live shows from wherever your location is.
Oh, so whatever's broadcasting at the moment, you're able to watch.
You're able to watch. You also have a lot of content from history of almost everything CBS has done.
Right, they would have a huge portfolio of programming.
Yeah, and any show that they broadcast is available the next day.
On CBS All Access.
On CBS All Access, and if you pay minus ads, so it's only 42 minutes rather than an hour.
Wait a second. Are you saying you can have access to All Access without paying for it?
No.
You said without ads.
Without ads.
Oh, there are no ads because you're paying for the service.
If you pay
slightly
more.
Higher price.
Oh, they have two tiers.
Yeah.
So they've got a base price and you're still subject to advertising.
Yeah, $7 and then $10.
Of course.
Is that a month?
Yeah, that's a monthly price.
A yearly rate, too.
Well, and then there's CBS.com. Which they choose certain programming to put out there, and it expires over time. So they might put out episodes of The Big Bang, but maybe next month you can't see them.
That's right.
Yeah.
And some of them, when it shows an array of episodes, some of them say all access only.
All access only.
Yeah, so that's like bait. You get to see the episode you want. You get to look at it, but you can't watch it unless you have all access.
Oh, it's in the catalog.
Yeah.
You're like, there it is. Oh,
it
but I can't do anything with it.
It might be 3 weeks ago, you know. Where it's not ancient.
It's
or anything.
It's called a tease, right?
That's
is that
right.
The word you were looking for? Tease?
They're teasing you.
The other channel that's kind of interesting is PBS. PBS is different based upon where you live and sign up for it. So in my case, Colorado. So they have a whole series of all the Colorado broadcasts, like all the history of the state. And a lot of the geography that's very interesting. But if you signed up in Arizona, you don't see that. You see all the Arizona stuff.
Really? You're saying that if you go to the website, your location, the region that you signed up for the service, dictates what programming you get to watch.
I'm pretty sure it's
it does. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's new. I didn't realize that was going on.
Yeah. So
in Washington, you get a lot of wheelies. Oh, okay.
That's true. I guess that's better than cheese. Well, very cool. That's a lot of inside information I was not aware of. One of the topics I've brought, if we're done with this, if anybody wants to contribute any more TV talk, this is a good time to do it. I'm going to swap topics. I just wanted to make people aware I have complained about Windows updates since around the first of the year when my ancient Dell laptop, it's a 2007, with an unsupported video card that was working fine with Windows 10, an update came out, and then it started crashing whenever I tried to put it to sleep or hibernation. And my only fix, my first fix, was to roll it back. And so that leads into another topic that I'll mention in just a moment, because I want to make people re-aware of that other topic, which is hiding updates. But my only two solutions at the time was I could roll it back to the previous version, or I could leave the laptop on all the time. And I switched my power button to tell it to put the hard drive and the screen to sleep and just leave it running so that it would not crash when I came back to it later. So it was continuing to use electricity. It was complete. It was totally accessible online without me being in front of it. I don't like that. It's a security risk and it's a power drain ish. I'm not. And so this whole time I've been complaining that they put out an update. The first time I rolled it back, it was so obvious it was Windows Update. I rolled it back. Everything went back to working perfectly. The hibernation worked. The sleep worked. I let it do the update again. Sleep would crash it, have a blue screen when it would come out of it. There'd be these random flashes on my screen, and then it would blue screen and reboot. which is very frustrating if you're somebody that develops things like websites and programs, because you leave your work open and all of this has just crashed. Well, they put out an update just a couple days ago and the problem is gone. And if you are experiencing problems from a prior update, I encourage you to share those with us, but also check and see if those, whatever fixes you did to live with those problems, let us know if they're gone, if you don't have to live with those problems anymore. Because I don't. I was caught completely off guard by the update. I just decided to try sleep, and it worked. So I re-enabled hibernation. It worked. I rebooted a number of times, retesting these to make sure I wasn't crazy. And it's fully functional again, my laptop. So the other thing about my problem, it's not documented anywhere, except for by me. I mean, Microsoft does not have this in a list of fixes or changes. I've read through the information, and there's nothing that says that they're working on this problem, nor that they had this problem after the update. I'm the only one that has it documented somewhere. I suspect it's because it's related to my video card in that laptop, which is running a Windows 7 video driver, because Microsoft told me when I was installing Windows 10 it was not going to be compatible with the video card. The computer is 11 years old, so I mean the onus is on me. As far as I'm concerned, if I wanted to keep using it, I should have left it at Windows 7. It was originally sold with Windows XP. That's how old this computer is. So for me, it's been a pet project to see how long I can keep it going with a modern operating
like
system.
Old car.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's been a fun pet project until all of a sudden, wait a second, this isn't fun anymore. It's crashing all the time.
Old car with new tires.
Well, yeah, or new gas, right?
Well, in the same vein, what good uses have you found for some of these old clunker computers? I have a couple that were extremely powerful when they were announced. You know, they were at the top of the line, IBM ThinkPads, max memory and everything like that. But things will come out like an Adobe update says your CPU has to be slightly faster, even though this machine's very fast, with just under their minimum. So it won't load Adobe, so you can't run certain websites.
Yeah, and fortunately, in general, we have moved away from Adobe. In fact,
yeah.
Adobe's pushing us to move away from Adobe now, as far as the flash readers.
Is the flash embedded in Windows 10?
It is still. Both.
Because I couldn't uninstall it the other day.
Yeah, you can't. It is part of Windows 10. Microsoft is keeping it up to date whenever there's a security issue with it. Chrome had it embedded, and Google has recently, like in the last 6 months, pulled it out of Chrome.
Yeah.
So if you're using Chrome as your Flash player, it's gone back to saying you need a plug-in to run it. So if you're using Windows Flash, the only place you're going to find it is, well, in an app that calls it, and from Internet Explorer, Edge from Microsoft Edge. I don't think there's anything else taking advantage of Microsoft's Flash version. I don't think they've made it.
So if you have Windows 10,
yes,
Microsoft thing, and you're doing Chrome, and it says you need
a flash thing.
Why isn't the Chrome picking up that you have that in your machine?
Because Microsoft has done it that way.
So
because it could.
Chrome, we already have it, or
no? Because Microsoft has limited Flash's ability to play to just Microsoft Edge and whatever anointed applications might be using. So, in the past, what I would recommend to people was install Chrome. For at the very least a Flash player that you don't have to maintain. So you use your browser of choice, and when you would go across, you would come across something saying you need the Flash browser, that would be the time you would open up Chrome and go to that particular website. This is good advice.
For example, which Flash player?
Well, no, let's not. In this example, this is when it was built into Chrome.
Okay.
And when it was built into Chrome, see, the advantage of that is you don't have to maintain updates to Flash. You don't have to put yourself at risk for Flash because Chrome was taking that responsibility. Google was taking that responsibility. And so you could use whatever browser you wanted. You would be observing the web and seeing how we're going farther and farther away from the Flash player. And that occasional website that would ask you for Flash, that would be your indicator. Oh, this website is still using this old technology. And you could make a judgment call whether you really need to be there in the first place. And if you did, if you decided that this still has value to me, I need to be able to run Flash, then you'd bring that website into Chrome and let Chrome run it. That way you don't have to maintain a version of Flash installed in your computer. Now, I have the same logic still, but not with Chrome. I have it with Microsoft Edge. So I use my browser of choice, be it Chrome or Firefox, or I've been using Opera. That's been my browser of choice for a long time right now. And if I stumble across a website that wants Adobe Flash Player, it'll announce to me, you can't do this without Adobe Flash Player. And I say, okay, I first make the judgment call, do I really care? Because anytime you're using Adobe Flash Player, you're opening up a whole nother set of security issues. And so I have to decide whether it's worth it to me. If I decide it's worth it to me, then I take that web address and I put it in Microsoft Edge and run it there.
I've used Microsoft Edge for several years now, and a couple of times I've gone to pages where it says the Flash was required. So if it's in there, why is it required?
It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be telling you that.
I've seen it happen at least a couple of times.
Now, what it might be telling you is that your Flash is out of date. Is that possible?
Well, it's in Windows 10 or in Windows 10.
Right, Edge. But they periodically put out system updates to the Adobe Flash that's installed. And I don't know for certain, but I wouldn't be surprised if Edge is blocking Flash access until you have the update.
But it's not part of the automatic Microsoft update?
It is, but if it hasn't gotten it in that time period, in that window between you're using it and it's gone out of date to the automatic update being installed, I wouldn't be surprised if Edge is blocking your access to it.
Can you force an update?
Yes, you can go into updates under Windows 10 in their setup. And go to the updates panel, and you can tell it to go look for updates just by hitting a button, check for updates, and it'll list what's available to you. Now, there's this gray area of updates, and that's where my crashing problem, I said there's a second issue here that I wanted to talk about. There's a gray area of updates where you have the update, and you're ready to install it, and your computer is not installing it for you for some reason. So it won't show up on your list of updates because as far as your computer is concerned, you're up to date. But it actually is not installed in your computer because of some technical glitch.
I always assume that message that you get saying that you need to install Flash as a Trojan horse, that you're going to get Flash plus their program.
Yeah, I think that's...
Just this week I was getting little voices after I did that.
I think anything that's helping from. You install Flash is
voices.
A Trojan horse.
They were on the computer, though.
I think that Paul, that's the way you want to approach it. If you are at a website that is helping you to install Flash, you need to get away from that website. Adobe doesn't want websites helping you install Flash at this point. I think they've taken too much heat for it, and they've considered a liability to push you in that direction. They recognize there are still websites out there using Flash, and so they still maintain a program that gets regular security updates, but they don't want you using it. They want you to go to... They've released tools for web developers to take their Flash and convert it to HTML5 so those websites don't have to keep using Flash. So I think that's a great rule of thumb. If you're on a website that's helping you install Flash, you want to back away from it to begin with. It's probably a Trojan.
That's exactly what happened to me this week, which is why I was trying to uninstall it, because it said install, and I can't remember if I did it or not, but I must have done enough that afterwards I'm listening to stuff and I'm hearing these voices like the advertising. And I close all the windows and everything, and there's nothing to be found. So I forget exactly what I did, but I got rid of them. Edge and Bing, are they the same?
Edge is the web browser, and Bing is a search service like Google.
Which only takes you to other searches.
Edge is Microsoft's version of Chrome. Chrome is by Google. Bing is Microsoft's version of Google.
Search.
Right. Oh, okay.
If you're going to go Google something, you could go Bing it.
Or you could dog pile it.
Who owns dog pile?
That's what I use it most of the time.
Do you take a plastic Bing bag with you?
It's habit. Uh-huh.
But yeah, so that's how that works. Google makes the Google search engine, and it makes the Chrome web browser. Microsoft makes the Bing search engine and the Edge web browser.
Why? I just realized the Bob search.
Why so many? And when I turn on Chrome, there's a window that comes up and says
States.
Edge is faster.
Right?
Yeah.
But I don't think it is, because
then you go to Netflix.
If you go to Bing with Chrome, it tells you that Edge is faster. If you go to Google with Edge, it tells you Chrome is faster. And all that is marketing, because they want that footprint in your computer. They want to own that.
They want that. I have it.
One of the most recent, Microsoft has these trial, they call them rings, that you can be part of, the Insider Ring. And this is where you get the latest developments in Windows 10. Before the official releases. And they use you as beta testers. When you agree to be part of the Insiders program, you agree to allow things to come into your computer that might crash it, might have problems, and you agree, and I'm telling you this so that you realize all the legal nonsense that you put a check mark on, this is what it's telling you in layman's terms. You've agreed to allow your computer to crash with software that's been untested, and you've agreed to send them the information so that they can take that and try and make a better product. Those are the two big things you're agreeing to when you agree to be in the Insiders program. I guess the third one is you've agreed for them to communicate with you if necessary. So you might get emails from them out of the blue going, wait a second, we want you to try this again. Seldom happens, but they reserve the right to communicate with you as well. On the Inside Ring, one of the things that has been observed is they've changed Windows 10 to use Edge as the default browser. And they have not made an allowance for you to change it to something else. Let me be more clear. They do have the allowance so that you can set something like Chrome as the default browser or Opera as the default browser. What they have really done is they have set their Microsoft programs to always use Edge regardless of what you've set as a default browser. So, for example, you're using Microsoft Mail and there's a link in Mail and you click on that link. Before, you'd expect it to open in Chrome because that's your default browser. Or you'd expect it to open in Firefox because that's your default. Now it will always open in Edge. And there's a big debate going on in the Insiders community whether this is okay or not. And so people are going out of their way to make a big stink out of this so that this is not something that trickles down to normal users. So if you ever have the opportunity to make a stink about it, you should, because that's not the openness that we're hoping for. That's one of the things about Windows has always been your ability to customize it to your advantage, to the way you prefer to use it. And they're trying to take this thing away. Hey, like, you know, the boiling the frog analogy. They're just little by little trying to keep you in their ecosystem without you being aware of what's happening. Because they know most people stick with the defaults. And so if everything's defaulting to their products, that's what you're going to end up using.
And this could lead to a fee to switch.
Yeah, that has really backfired on them, though.
Well, you're right.
That's
still on the books. I mean,
they've definitely been trying that in the past with the Windows 10S edition. I don't know if you guys
between mashed potatoes and French fries. You know, that's all you're going to get, no matter which one you choose. You can't choose something outside of that thing.
Yeah,
most of the marketing done today has that kind of parameter to it. That you've got this, that, but you can't get that, and you can't enter it in there.
Or have a new startup offer one thing more.
Well, what they might do is they might start requesting a fee so that your browser, if you're the Opera company, they might start requesting a fee from them to make sure that switch can be made. Requesting a fee from us is going to backfire. And we've just seen that with the Windows 10S that they were trying to push. You remember the S stands for socks? What they were doing was they were taking full-blown Windows 10 that could run any application written for Windows that you could download from any website, and they were locking it down, saying this is faster or speedier. S could mean speedier. Or it could mean secure. It's more secure.
Or slower.
If you get your slower. No, it's supposed to be faster. They were locking it down so that you could only get your applications from the Microsoft Store. That was the intention of the Windows 10S release. And they actually released computers that had Windows 10S on them. There was no technical reason that your computer couldn't run your old version of Photoshop, except the S version would stop it from installing. And their contingency plan to that was, if you really need to run this software, say you're a business, then you could pay a fee and upgrade to Windows 10. And you could remove the S. So that didn't go over very well with people.
It's not a help, it's a restriction.
It's a help because it's a restriction. Hey, I'm speaking in Microsoft speak. It's a help because it's a restriction. It's protecting you from yourself.
Isn't that wonderful? I thought they were doing things like that.
Well, the other thing that's ridiculous about it is their app store is still not very robust. There's lots of software that's missing from their app store. So by locking you in to using only, they're called progressive web apps or progressive Windows apps, you really are being locked into a narrow column of applications available for your device. Whereas technically that's not the case. Technically, that Windows, your computer, is capable of running a whole robust array of software that's been written out there, and the reason that you don't have access to it is because they have not wanted to put it in the Windows Store. So they were trying to kind of nudge these developers to go into the store. It's a win-win. Our users are more secure. Your software is considered more secure, easier to find. It didn't fly with the customers or the developers, and so they've had to back off away from it. So now, there is no Windows 10S version being distributed with new computers. Doesn't exist anymore. What it does exist is an S mode that you can turn on for free.
Does that connect you with the HTTPS? or
only in rhetoric. I mean, like you might hear somebody, a spokesman for Microsoft, equating it to that, but it technically it's not related at all. It would just be rhetoric that would equate it. It'd be like, we're trying to make Windows more secure, just like the encryption that they're trying to use with HTTPS, just like the vetting that's done from an app store, like Apple has done with their app store. But it would be rhetoric. It wouldn't be technically tied to it. The S mode now will be like a checkbox or an off and on switch that you or an administrator of a network could force on your computer. And some of you are already dealing with this kind of stuff. The Android phones, the Android tablets, in them have a mode to only allow software to be installed from Google Play or a vetted app store. Like if you have an Android device from Amazon, there's a mode that you can only install software from the Amazon app store. So that's what Microsoft is doing now. Instead of pushing it out like an operating system version, they're putting a restraint, an optional restraint, on their installation procedure so that you can flip a switch and put administrative permissions on it so that only software from the App Store can be installed, which is a much better approach. It's what they should have done in the first place.
Who would choose that except their employees?
Well, what they'll do is they will release new computers with that switch on, which is what Android devices do right now.
Okay.
I don't bring up Apple devices because you can't install software on an Apple device unless it comes from an app store. It is on and permanent on an Apple device. And you have to jump through hoops called jailbreaking to make the Apple device accept software developed outside of the Apple ecosystem. It is only a hacker thing to do. It is not what real people are doing. They're not jailbreaking their device and putting in software that's... So that app store from Apple is very robust, very sophisticated software, because it's the only way to get it into your Apple device. The Google devices or the Android devices, they're all over the board. You've got app stores all over the place. Legitimate app stores are Google Play, Amazon, Galaxy, the Galaxy App Store. Those are some very legitimate places to get your apps, and they're full of stuff that isn't legitimate. But what you'll find is when you buy an Android device, it will be locked into using vetted app stores. And if it's not an Amazon device, the Amazon app store will be thought of as an illegitimate place to install software. Like if you have a Galaxy phone, but you want to install software you bought at the Amazon app store, you will have to install the Amazon App Store to begin with, which will not be considered a legitimate install. You'll have to go into your Amazon device, say, I will allow third-party software from unknown developers, and then install the Amazon Store, and then do your installs from the Amazon Store. You can flip that switch back, and for novices, I would recommend that. What that switch protects you from is inadvertently in installing software that you're pointed to that is malicious from websites. I hope you guys are keeping up with me. I'm sorry if I'm boring people.
Well, in the same vein, do you recommend on Windows making the administrator sign-on visible and then taking your sign-on and eliminating admin rights, so that then your normal sign-on basically can install software, which is the most likely spot to get all the Trojans and everything?
Okay, does everybody understand that concept? The problem with Windows is from the beginning we were all administrators.
Right?
And that means that anybody using the computer was able to install software. And software was written and developed for Windows with that in mind. that anybody could install software on the computer. And then they reconned it so that there were permission levels. And the problem with that, with developers, is they had to catch up. And so throughout Windows XP and Windows Vista and all the way into Windows 7, you would run into installation problems. Problems running software because you didn't have administrative privileges. Because of the way the software would install, if you gave just normal user privileges, software would crash. It would have problems running. That problem is actually gone now. But the legacy of thought is still there. We all come out of a world where we've all run as administrators. And normal Windows users don't want to move to another account to install software so that they can use it on their regular account. They don't want to keep track of an administrative password. They just want to turn on their computer and use it, and they want to be able to install software when they need it. Hey, you're following what I'm talking about, Dave?
I agree that that's, and a lot of people want to work that way, but that's also the way you're going to get the most malicious software.
That's right. And so I go back and forth on it. As an IT professional, I would never run like that. I would never have my user have administrative rights. I would always have an administrative account where the software is installed. As a home user, that is so insane. I mean, you have to be really aware of security issues and understand how to move to an administrative account to install software. Now, most people wouldn't do it. I mean, most of the people, the faces I'm looking at the table here, probably still don't understand exactly what I'm talking about. You would have to teach them that and then get them to keep track of an administrative password and leave their normal environment, go into an administrative environment, do their download of an install of software there. This won't be fixed until we're running everything out of an app store. Because one of the beauties of the app store is it's restrained to user permissions. When you use the Windows app store to install software, you install it for your user account. You don't install it for your wife's account or your kid's account or your grandkid's account. You're installing it in that instance for your account. If they want that software when they log in, they have to do the install again from the Windows Store. And it totally sidesteps this administrative permissions issue. So we're moving to that world, but because we come out of this Windows legacy world, it's slow going. It's frustrating, but the majority of the software that we install in Windows does not come out of the App Store. And if it doesn't come out of the App Store, you need administrative permissions. Does that answer your question?
In other words, if you have the knowledge, okay. If you don't,
yeah. If you have the knowledge, if you have the knowledge, you're not asking me to do it.
I'm just thinking if it's a good idea.
Yeah. It is definitely a good idea. From a security standpoint, it is the way we should be operating.
I asked you to set up my machine so that when I turned it on, 10 seconds later, it's ready to go do everything that is possible to do.
Gary is your typical Windows user. It should turn on. It's an appliance. It should do what it was doing yesterday. It should be ready to go when I turn it on.
Oh, I got one of those.
Russ is on a Macintosh. One of the beauties of the way the Mac works is that you can run as an administrator, and when you're getting into that gray area of installing malicious software, it at least prompts you, and you have to know a password to authorize the installation. Windows doesn't work that way.
That whole Apple Store idea is so that they're safe. They're guaranteeing you that what you put in or have to buy or get free from them.
That's right.
Is a legitimate program.
It's the sense of vetting, this sense that there's a larger organization taking responsibility for what you have access to install, and they vetted it as secure. Now, it is interesting. They have recently, in the last year, they've had to do this whole reconcile of their stores. From all the Google or all the Android stores out there to the Apple store. The Apple store found hundreds of malicious applications that had made their way through the vetting process. And that sounds bad until you pay attention to the Google or the Android stores, where they found tens of thousands of pieces of software that had made it through their vetting processes. And so the Apple store is really still considered the most secure place, but it's not the end-all security that we were hoping it would be. There's still people getting around the vetting.
They could call it the CYA account.
Yeah. What security software do you recommend?
As far as...
Like McAfee.
Oh, for antivirus?
Yeah.
You know, that's another one that we've gone back and forth on as Windows 10 versions have been updated. At the moment, I'm saying use the Windows 10 antivirus and firewall that's built in.
Yep. Defender?
Yeah. Take out whatever antivirus you've been using and don't get conned into buying it. The exception to this rule is in a corporate environment because a corporate-maintained antivirus structure gives you so much power. You're able to push antivirus down to machines from one machine. You can get antivirus reports from 100 machines at once. You can see a virus on one machine and block it from entering the network and going. But none of you folks are working in that environment, and so you can't take advantage of any of those things.
I think if you're using Windows and malware bytes, you're going to be pretty well protected.
I agree with Linda. I think malware bytes is a good one after the fact or before the fact if you want to pay for it. But I'm not recommending that you pay for it. I think it's a great utility after you think that you might have caught something. It'll go through your system.
If you watch, I bought it for a one-time.
One-time fee.
One-time fee. I've never had to pay for it again. It runs every night at 2 o'clock, so it isn't bothering me. And
it's basically, it's emptying out the cache of your web browser.
And if you use CClean and clean up and make sure you don't have any, because CCleaner cleans up a lot of stuff, garbage. Yeah.
It also causes a lot of problems, I think.
CClean? What's it called? I don't think so. CCleaner?
I have to disagree, Dave.
Malware
the only
bytes?
Time that I've had an
malware
issue with CCleaner
bytes, huh?
Or malware bytes is when they've been run without an update beforehand. Because they've been really good on when Windows has put out an update, they've gone back, readdressed their software, they've looked at those registry entries, and they've pushed out an update so that it won't cause any problems. Had very few bad experiences with those two particular
really
ones.
Yeah, malware seems fine, but CCleaner seems to
I don't
somehow
have
not get
with
the
it.
Registry.
I use Glary Utilities, and it cleans out all the little garbage.
I think Glary's is still very good. Actually, funny trivia, I never was aware of Glary's until Linda turned me on to it. And I think it's a decent program as well. All of these I use with the caveat of making sure it's got the latest update before you run it. And the anytime you manipulate the registry, there's the fear that you might do some damage.
It seems to me the last time I went to update Glary, there was some other thing involved where you had to either buy something or...
Well, that is a problem with the Glary suite, is their default install has check marks to install other garbage. And so when you install it, you have to read the install and deactivate those extra programs.
Kind of like Adobe.
like the Flash Player. Yeah. There's a lot of people that are running around with a copy of McAfee's free scanner installed because they didn't unmark when they installed Adobe Flash. And I would immediately remove any of that stuff that... You could do a search on your installs. Look for Norton. Look for McAfee. Look for Avast. look for these in your installers and pull all those out and just run with the Windows 10 Defender until you hear different from a group like this.
Well, if you have two different things doing the checking, it doesn't seem to work that well.
Yeah, it kills the performance. At the very least, it kills the performance.
Yeah. I've been using WiseCare for a long time.
That's a name I have not heard. WiseCare.
It's a subscription.
Subscription.
I think they'll give you 5 computers. And no advertising. Very efficient, just like Linda's. It runs every night.
Yeah.
Cleans out all your cache and all your other stuff. And also you can catch malware. And it's got other features also. Very, very good program. It might be something like $19 a year or something like that.
Yeah, again, it's hard not to just recommend the vanilla Microsoft. And the thinking behind it is they have a vested interest in making sure the operating system is not infected. They also have a purchase version for their corporate customers using the same technology. Like we talked, I talked briefly about having a third party for a corporate environment, because you can do things like push down updates to 100 computers or get. Well, Microsoft actually provides that as well, and it sits on a foundation of the same technology for their antivirus. So if their antivirus is being compromised in your computer, you can bet they're concerned about it getting compromised in their corporate paying customers' computers as well. The only reason that Microsoft didn't do antivirus from the beginning, and they tried to, was because of their problems with the Justice Department way back when they decided they were a monopoly. They had to take the browser out of their operating system. They had to take the antivirus out of their operating system. They had to take the disk tools out of their operating system because they felt like it was anti-competitive practices. Ironically, that all that stuff lingered for so long in the courts that by the time they were making a settlement, a judgment on it, it was very appropriate for them to have their own browser in their operating system. It was very appropriate for them to have their own disk tools and their own antivirus. So immediately after the judgment was done and they had settled with the Justice Department, all those things went right back into their product, because you could see examples of that being done everywhere else. Apple was doing it, Linux was doing it, so why can't Microsoft do it?
Okay, is there a password remember app that you would recommend?
A black notebook.
Yep. Yeah, I've got one.
Little black book. What would you recommend, Linda?
I use a phone book.
Oh, like what I just recommended.
I know more people that have all their stuff in their phone. If you lose your phone, you've lost everything.
Yeah, because you don't write phone numbers down anymore. You rely on the phone. Yeah.
Except for now, I know someone like Irving. He's got a big, long sheet that he prints out.
Yeah,
yeah, Irving's got his hand up behind you.
Yeah.
Irving!
He has a.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's no answer.
Have you heard of RoboForm?
RoboForm is an ancient program. I haven't heard anybody mention it in a long time.
RoboForm, and there is a subscription. You know, people don't want to pay for stuff. And they're willing to listen to advertisements, you know, and it's not for them. But RoboForm is very, very effective. And,
yeah.
It's a very good program.
I use LastPass, but I'm not real happy with it. It's not easy to install a new password and keep track.
What we're talking about are called password managers.
Rather than rememberers?
Yeah. Password managers.
I use a little black book version, but when I change a password, I forget to go into the book and make note that that's the newest one.
Well, if we delete McAfee, it deletes their truth, which doesn't work anyway.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop you from entering the wrong one. And having the machine tell you, no, that's not the password.
Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome,
well, I've
Maggie.
Got two places.
Well, you can.
I think I don't recommend any password. I'm sorry, Paul. I don't recommend any password manager.
I don't either.
And the exception in tech circles, LastPass gets recommended a lot for their security and the features that it has.
KeyPass Access is one.
If you have a word processor,
locally,
if you have a word processor and you have a page with all your passwords on it, you can password protect that page.
Yeah, do that with Excel.
As long as you remember the password for that, you're okay.
Yeah, I think I would be very, very careful with digital documents of passwords because you don't want those things syncing to the cloud. You don't want to put it in a OneDrive or a Google Docs. Because you've essentially made it possible for those for that list of passwords to be out there 1,000 copies.
Mm-hmm. Even encrypted with a password.
Which is what tricky is.
So in estate planning, how do you get that list to your kid?
Wow, that is a great topic that I have no good information for.
The only way, if you send them the printed sheet, mine are all in code, kind of, so I forget them. But if you send them a printed sheet.
With a group like this, we should make that one of our missions. The six rules of how to provide access to the next of kin. We should come up with something like that.
Well, I helped somebody here. Her husband died. Okay, it took me almost 2 months trying to decipher, figure out what he'd done. I had to go into every website. First, I had to change the username. Then I wait. Then you got to go back in and change the password of everything to get it to a place where we could figure out what was really going on. I mean, it took me a long time to go through each and every one of the websites that were
right
pertinent, like the banking and all the stuff, get rid of all his emails, get rid of the email account, which was difficult.
In this vein, let me mention that one of the latest LastPass features that I have heard about is the ability to verify that someone has died and you leave somebody as the next of kin. So if, like Paul, you're using LastPass, you're able to go in and you're able to specify someone's email address that is your next of kin. And they can go to LastPass and they can say, Paul died. Sorry to hear it. And they will send you an email asking for you to verify this is true. And the way you verify that it's true is you don't answer the email. And you set a period of time. Right. You set a period of time that you think is a legitimate amount of time to verify that you have died. Maybe it's a day, maybe it's 5 days, maybe it's 2 months. But when that time limit has been reached and no one has come back to LastPass saying this is false, then they send that email address an access key to your LastPass account so that they can get access to all your accounts.
The other thing that's really important, if you're on Facebook, to go to Facebook now and you can deem that if you pass, then the account is closed. Because my father died. We've never been able to get the Facebook off of there. Then they want you to send them all kinds of documentation that the person's really dead. It's just ridiculous. I mean, you should be able to go in and close an account. And the problem is now, if you close your account on Facebook, your account's really never closed.
Well, yeah.
See, with all the crap going on and you want to go get out of Facebook and close it, well, you can just turn it off, but the account is still open.
They say by 2020, half the people on Facebook will be dead.
That's good to know.
That's the older generation.
You know.
Well,
what's that, 2 years?
The Facebook procedure is to close your account and then don't touch it again.
Yeah,
if you touch it again, it immediately turns off the delete function. So if you're using Facebook Messenger or you're going to Facebook, just with a web browser, it automatically signs you in. That whole deleting your Facebook shuts down that process and it's an active account again.
Same thing with LinkedIn. If you are on LinkedIn and then you get off and close it.
So you could have devices that are automatically like say you have a random tablet over in the corner of your room that you hardly ever touch, but it gets Facebook updates. The moment it gets an update, it shuts down the delete function.
Okay, the one company that just got, I forget the name of it, that just got hacked, and everybody got hacked from it this last week.
Saks?
Huh?
Saks Fifth Avenue?
Yeah, that account. Okay, if you closed, your stuff is still in there. They're still going to get your information.
Right.
You didn't close it off.
And actually, this delete Facebook is a statement. When you do this, you're sending a statement to Facebook because you're not protecting your data. Your data is already out there in the wild.
Right.
Yeah. Right? You're not shutting down their access to your data when you do that because they've already got all the data they need from you. Right. What you're doing is you're telling Facebook, I won't put up with this any longer. So it's more a statement you're making than anything else.
Yeah. Sunday's Tucson paper had an article about how to get off.
You know, just as something spurious, you just say, well, now I'm living in Des Moines, and da-da-da-da-da. Do they have an archive of old data?
Of course, yeah. In fact, it's a fallacy to assume that they delete your data when you delete your account.
You know what I hate? Yeah. It's when you buy something and you get ads for it.
Yeah, after you bought it.
Even
or you look at something.
If we're gonna readdress previous topics, I want to go back to one thing with the Windows updates that I did not get to finish the second point of the updates. I told you about the crashing problem. The second solution was to hide the update. Now, if you're not familiar with how to hide an update, go to Google and Google Windows Hide Show Updates. If you've gotten an update and your computer has started acting wonky afterwards, you may want to pull that update out. You roll back. There's a rollback in the update. Up to 30 days, you can roll back whatever updates were installed. There is a little utility, very small, easy to download utility from Microsoft that you can find if you Google Windows Hide Show, Windows space Hide space Show space Updates. You'll find this little tiny like 1.6 megabyte download. And when you run that, it will search your computer for updates that are waiting to be installed. And you can choose to hide them from the installer. And Windows just puts them aside so that they won't continue to try and install them. I had a customer at the town hall meeting that the U.S. Consulate had recently complaining to me that their latest update had shut down their computer. It was causing their computer to do reboots and crashes. And I recommended this to her. It was that big update from build 1603 to 1709. And she was able to find that big update, put a check mark in it, and now her computer is no longer trying to do that update. The caveat with this is when you installed Windows 10 or started using Windows 10, you agreed to take all the updates. So eventually, an update is going to come down that includes those updates that you have chosen not to install. You cannot get away from these updates. What you're doing is you're postponing the inevitable. The idea, though, is that the inevitable will come without the problem you're currently experiencing. Kind of like my crashing every time it went to sleep. They finally put out an update that doesn't crash my computer. So that update was okay to install.
Okay, what's this thing again?
Okay, to find it, I don't remember the official name, but it's always one of the first or second links. Windows space hide space show space update. Windows hide show updates. It'll take you right to the Microsoft article. It comes off of a Microsoft page. They don't make a lot of people aware of it. That's why you have to do a Google search to find it. They're not going to put it right in front of you. They don't want people postponing updates. But they recognize this is a problem, especially for their developers, and so they've made sure that this is out there. Now, what I discovered when I was using it is that there's two features in this: hide updates, show updates. These are things that have already been hidden that you want to try and install again. When I first ran it on my old computer, I found a half a dozen things that were ready to be installed as updates. However, if I went to check for updates, there was nothing appearing. It was saying I was completely up to date. If I turned off the computer, there was a very good chance it might say running Windows updates, even though right before that it said there were no updates to install. I believe, and I think I've backed it up with some research on the internet, I think that I've got enough conclusions from technical people that this list of things that is not showing up as ready to install but are there to be hidden represent updates for one reason or another technically could not get installed. I also believe that I've verified it through other tech people that they also represent updates that your computer is continually trying to install and failing. And I was amazed when I chose to hide all of those, my computer would shut down faster and it would start up faster, and I never saw the message that it was trying to install updates. So the update feature in the setup has a list it generates of what's available to download and install or what it's currently installing, as well as a message that says you don't need any updates, everything is fine. That does not necessarily correspond with what's happening in the background, which could be a list of things that for some technical reason can't get installed but is continually trying to reinstall. And this utility makes that obvious. It shows you that list.
Yeah. In XP, it used to be obvious.
Yeah, in XP, it would fail. It would show you the failings.
That's happening all the time.
That's right. So, and in Windows 10, it doesn't show you that.
So what's the trick to do then?
Well, there is a little utility that you can find off of a Microsoft page. It should come from a Microsoft page. It is not a third-party utility. It's from Microsoft.
It says your Windows 10 PC gets the latest updates automatically. In rare cases, a driver or update might cause issues with your PC. To keep the update from reinstalling automatically, download this troubleshooter. It will let you hide the problematic updates.
That's right.
But
and
how
so
do you
if
know
if
which
you
one's problematic?
Well, here's my key. You go into setup under the update function and you check to make sure there's no awaiting updates, and it will say you're all up to date with a green check mark. Then run this application under I want to hide updates and see what list appears. If anything appears in that list, that represents things that are trying to get installed but failing.
So what do you do with it?
I would check them all to hide them. I don't think you can do any damage because Microsoft eventually is going to put out an update that includes those updates.
Okay.
So you have no choice but to accept updates, but this is a way of deferring them.
So, I cannot delete my Yahoo account. I followed all the things and then get a final screen and it won't take me.
Well, what happens to you? What do you end up with?
It's there. It won't go away. And I don't use it anymore, so I'm trying
to...
It's like
Facebook.
Yeah, it's like Facebook.
But that final screen should have said something like, if you don't use this account for 90 days, then it will be deleted and inaccessible.
No, it gave me two choices, and I clicked on the one, go ahead, and delete.
It didn't give you any confirmation? Or because that's really what you're looking for. You might just try and do it through a different web browser.
That's... Good point.
Yeah.
Why don't you just go into uninstall programs on Windows 10?
Oh, is that the question? Do you have an app for Yahoo?
I don't know. I'll
yet.
Check that.
because if you...
When you installed it, you went into program, add and remove programs. Just go to add and remove programs and remove the Yahoo. Wouldn't that be...
I don't think there's one there.
Yeah, most people don't install a Yahoo application.
Yeah.
Most people are just going to it through a web browser.
Yeah.
I suspect that what you're talking about is your account. Like, you use the analogy, it's like Facebook. Which is not accessed through an app, it's just accessed through a web browser. Yeah,
well, like
and
Facebook.
Keep in mind, that stuff doesn't get deleted. I mean,
it doesn't get deleted.
What you're deleting is your access to it.
Yeah.
And they're saying that we delete your data. Well, what specifically Yahoo and specifically Facebook have proven is they haven't deleted it. It's still out there. It's still being used. It has been sold off to some company. This thing with Cambridge Analytics. Facebook's procedure for making sure your data gets deleted is they send out a notice to companies like Cambridge Analytics saying you need to delete that data.
Right.
Fill out this form and sign it.
They're never going to delete it.
They fill it out and sign it, send it back, and Facebook is done. They said they deleted it.
Yeah.
It's CYA. We're no longer liable because they're liable. They said that they did it. Well, thanks, guys.
Yeah,
we've kind of petered out here at the end. People have been walking away, but we are like 20 minutes over. It's time for us to shut it down.
You know, next week,
trying to get off of it.
Maybe you can discuss. Did you notice how they changed that thing and now there's that PowerShell?
Yeah.
Okay.
You mean instead of the command line?
No, in addition to. PowerShell.
Well, they've had PowerShell for a long time.
It was in that last update.
Okay.
I'm not sure what you mean. PowerShell has been around.
What
they had was an option so that you could choose to have the command line show up or the PowerShell.
Well, if you right click now on Windows 10,
right,
you'll see it's in there and the other stuff is gone.
Right, the command line is gone.
Right.
Right.
So how do you get the command line up?
Well, you know, before there was a feature to say whether you wanted command line to appear there or PowerShell
right.
to show up there.
So now right-click on Windows 10 and you'll see that it's gone. And it's just calling it the PowerShell now.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that.
Well,
they didn't announce it.
If they have turned off the feature where you could choose one or the other to appear in that list, because maybe that's what you're experiencing. Maybe they've turned off the ability to tailor it to either say PowerShell
to put in command prompt.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
is you can still search
you
for the command
on,
prompt.
The command prompt isn't there.
Thank
right.
you,
you're welcome. Yeah, I know that they changed the default, but I don't know if they changed the setting. I know they changed the default. I know if you had command prompt there, now it says PowerShell. What I don't know is if they changed your ability to configure that. Because before you could configure that, you could choose command prompt or PowerShell. It was an either or. It was like
I just kind of go into the search thing and brought up the command prompt.
Right.
But it doesn't.
But let's look. Let's just look in settings and see if there's
Windows 10
shell.
Show the command prompt right there, and now it seems to be gone in that latest update.
Taskbar start menu.
You know that latest update really screwed up the printers.
Yeah, to the printer lady.
Yeah,
you can take care of all those problems.
No, not now with these. Not now the way they put the computer chips on the ink cartridges.
Here it is. Replace
I've
command prompt.
I've done everything you told you to do.
So, in settings,
under
the taskbar, there's a list of toggle switches for on or off. And what they've done, and what they've done is they have taken the option replace command prompt with Windows PowerShell in the menu when I right click the start button or press Windows key X. That's what you're talking about. Is when you right click the start button, what appears is either command prompt or PowerShell depending on this toggle. And what they did in the last update is they turned the toggle on, whereas it used to be off. So if I turn it off, like I'm doing now, then if I go into that list, it says command prompt.
Okay.
Are you following me?
Yeah, but where do you do it? Where do you do it?
I haven't shut any of this off. Stop! This has been the San Carlos Computer Club. I'm Scott Stimson with International Computer Solution. My tech helper is shutting us down before I get a chance to shut us down. I just want to say thank you. Okay, this is when you know I shut down. We're learning. This is the only second time we've worked together. And I thank you for tuning in. I thank you for your interest in the Computer Club. And I will plan on seeing you guys next week, Tuesday, from 9:15 to 10:15. We meet each week here at Tequila's. We are here to answer your tech problems. We are a majority of the club is seniors retired in Mexico, so you can imagine the priority of some of our tech issues. If you are interested in any of this, you can find it at sccclub.org. If you have computer issues anywhere on the internet, I'd appreciate you getting a hold of me at internationalcs.net. You can email me, Scott, at internationalcs.net. You can find the Computer Club in iTunes or anywhere that you might get your podcasts by searching for the San Carlos Computer Club. Just want to say thanks again. We'll catch you next week. And until then, tech on.
Are not good enough to protect themselves.
Right. So then nothing. I think Scott would agree with me. Anything with passwords does not go in the cloud. Protected, encrypted, anything.